Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
President Obama signs the debt deal into law. Malala police arrest people in a logging protest. And a cougar is removed from a tree in Vancouver.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed! That means you! For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, August 2nd, 2011. Malala police arrested three people inside an Oregon Department of Forestry office yesterday during a logging protest. Officers first got word of a large protest group of about 30 people inside and outside the ODF Malala unit office at 10:45 a.m. on Monday. They were protesting logging in the Elliott State Forest in Coos County. When police arrived, they said they found 20 people inside the office, past the reception desk, and in the interior business office area that includes the fire dispatch center.
I knew a girl from Coos County, if you know what I mean.
All but four of the protesters left the inside office area and went outside, police say, but three of them were using some sort of interlocking tubing to link themselves together.
I knew a girl who used interlocking tubing to link people together, if you know what I mean.
They stayed seated on the floor, blocking the interior entry. Nothing?
What do you mean?
And refusing to leave. About 3:15 p.m., the three women were arrested and taken to Clackamas County Jail. Police say 26-year-old Meredith Cox, 21-year-old...
I knew. Never mind.
And it's spelled exactly the way it sounds,
really?
Too. Yes.
Excellent.
None of this COX nonsense. Oh, no. 21-year-old Daniel Hauser and 21-year-old Sarah Silvestro were booked on charges of criminal trespass and disorderly conduct. No protesters were arrested outside the office, but Highway 211 had to be closed because protesters initially moved near the highway and interfered with traffic.
I'm sorry, and I must have missed all of this. They were, what with all of the cocks and the blocking and the entry and the thrusting and the coups.
I don't think there was any thrusting.
Well, maybe not on your side of the table. What were they protesting exactly?
Something to do with logging. Logging in the Elliott State Forest.
They know they live in Oregon, right? I mean, the ship has sort of sailed on the whole logging thing. We do that here.
Yeah.
It's begun.
Apparently, though, these particular people, again it.
Okay. Well, whatever. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, August 2nd, 2011. Thank you for drawing near on this day that ye might be informed and entertained. Probably not in that order. Coming up later in this hour, your Science on the March, also entertainment news. If you want to get this program later on the day, you can do so via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. You can also take it with you on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Oregon State Police Detective Aaron Jackson said 26-year-old Scott Brandon turned himself in Monday night after being sought in connection with a campsite stabbing in Clatsop County. Brandon was arrested August 1st at the OSB Portland Area Command Office and lodged in the Clackamas County Jail for assault in the second degree. Brandon is suspected of stabbing 30-year-old Jeremy Pete in the abdomen after the two became involved in a verbal argument. OSP said Brandon's alleged to have sprayed Pete in the face with a chemical agent similar to mace before he stabbed him. Both men were part of a large group of about 50 people camping near Wolf Creek Road in Clatsop County on July 30th. Brandon was eventually overpowered and disarmed by other campers. He then fled on foot into the woods. A search that evening by troopers and deputies failed to find him. Pete was taken to St. Vincent's Hospital, where he's being treated for non-life-threatening injuries. I don't like stories like that because I don't find out what they were arguing about.
No, you need to know. I mean, really, because otherwise it's just, otherwise it's like the Kennedy killing. It's a big unresolved hole in your head, you know? It's a lingering intellectual itch.
And what do you get into an argument about when you're camping, really? I mean, somebody was supposed to bring the marshmallows and forgot.
Kumbaya versus untoppable smoking.
Yeah. Guy just would not stop telling the scary campfire tales.
He said, no, it was a hook. It wasn't a hand, it was a hook.
Come on!
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. If you would like to get this program as you go about your daily...
I think you already told them this.
I was going to talk about the other thing.
Oh, okay.
Never mind.
I swear to God, you just told them about getting it on their mobile device.
No, I was going to tell them something totally different.
Oh, really?
That's okay. No, you know, it doesn't matter. No.
The meeting was so similar.
It's fine. They don't need to know the information that I was just going to give them. They can just go without. And in fact, not only am I not going to say it today, I'm never going to say what I was about to say.
Ever?
Ever.
Not ever?
Only in my head where no one else can hear it. But that's fine because I already know it.
Okay.
I can all suck it. Anyway, next hour, though, the Rick Emerson Radio Program will be plugging your ear holes with amusements. And it is at rickemersonshow.com. rickemersonshow.com. You can do that next hour, rickemersonshow.com, for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. Here is Dawn Taylor.
So, as promised, the Senate signed off on the House-passed debt deal this afternoon, passing the measure 74-26 and sending it to President Obama's desk for his signature. President Obama addressed the debt ceiling negotiations this afternoon for what seemed like the millionth time, calling the deal he is expected to sign later today an important first step to ensure that the nation can live within our means. The president said he will now refocus his efforts on creating new jobs, higher wages, and faster economic growth. We've got to do everything in our power to grow this economy and put this country back to work, he said.
Is growing the economy like when you buy those little magic crystals from the back of a comic book and you cover them with water and then they turn into stalagmites?
I think it's more like sea monkeys. They tell us that they're there and you expect it to look like a magical seahorse wearing a crown, but then you look at it and it's just brine shrimp.
Okay.
It's more like that.
Fair enough.
Anyway, President Obama did indeed sign the debt deal that the House and the Senate passed earlier today. And the White House has said a deal would be needed to be in place by midnight tonight in order to avoid the risk of government default.
I think I speak for, you know, many people, if not everyone. I speak for me when I ask, how is it living within our means if we're... Because we were, correct me if I'm wrong here, we were lowering the debt ceiling so that we would have less money available to us. The debt ceiling was going to be taken. It was going to be dropped because we're obviously making less money. So we want to constrict the debt ceiling because it would make no sense to raise it, obviously.
Now, I don't think they did. Did they lower it? I thought they just left it where it was.
Well, no. That would be foolish, Don. Mm-hmm. You can't leave it where it is. You certainly can't raise it. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be living within our means.
Right.
Living within our means would be making sure that we were not going to expend any additional money that we did not have. Raise the debt ceiling. Hi. All right. So I just want to make sure that I absolutely understand where we're coming from on this.
Yeah.
Living within our means. We're not going to be spending more than we make in this country.
No, and fortunately, with 10 hours to spare, they finally figured it out and signed it into law. And now China will not be coming in and repossessing our factories or whatever, I guess, would have happened if they didn't do this.
No, I think they're going to skip straight to the shooting us part. I think they were going to come and get their stuff first. You know, it's sort of like getting rid of, getting your Allman Brother records out of the apartment before you set fire to it. You know, like before you torch all your boyfriend's stuff in the lawn, you make sure there's no loose change inside that you need.
China, angry psycho girlfriend of the world.
They last time you sleep with sister! And then they just, you know.
You'll never love me!
Why you leave half-inch milk in carton, still call it full? I'm sorry, the staff and management and the advertisers of Cascadia.fm, they make us do that.
Okay.
Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
A group of atheists has filed a lawsuit challenging the so-called World Trade Center cross included in an exhibit at the National September 11th Memorial Museum. The group alleges that featuring these 17-foot cross-shaped beams, which come from the wreckage of the World Trade Center, violates the U.S. Constitution and publicly promotes Christianity over all other religions.
Love of God, so to speak.
American Atheists, the plaintiff group in the suit, said in its complaint Wednesday, many of American Atheists members have seen us, either in person or on television, and are being subjected to and injured in consequence of having a religious tradition not their own imposed upon them through the power of the state.
Yeah, I don't even know how I made it out of the house this morning, frankly. It's causing me such agony at this very moment. I may not be able to finish the story. I may get choked up, Don.
Ground Zero rescue workers found the cross-shaped beams 2 days after the September 11th attacks. Later, it was moved to St. Peter's Church, a Roman Catholic parish near the World Trade Center site. On Saturday, the cross was moved from St. Peter's and lowered into its permanent home in the 9/11 Museum.
I mean, aren't atheists afraid that this just makes them sound like a group of colossal pussies?
No.
Like, if they're just not even able to look at it because it's going to burn their eyes.
No.
Yes?
Now, just the World Trade Center Memorial Foundation said that the cross is a symbol of spiritual comfort for the thousands of recovery workers who toiled at Ground Zero. The foundation added that the cross is an authentic physical reminder that recalls the story of 9/11 in a way nothing else can. The foundation also disputed American Atheists' claim that including the cross in the museum's exhibit amounted to an endorsement of Christianity over other religions. A spokesman for the organization told ABC News that other religious artifacts would be included at the exhibit, including a Jewish prayer shawl given by a victim's family member and a Star of David made from WTC steel.
And also, by the way, I mean, for the two things. A, and keep in mind, I've never seen God and have no evidence that he exists. So it's not like I have some, it's not like I am marching out of darkness as a soldier of Christ or anything. But two things. A, this is the cross that wasn't made. This is the cross they found.
Right.
That it was a naturally occurring thing. And which isn't, that means the handiwork of God. But I mean, I understand that as a people and as a civilization that we place a great emphasis on, you know, on symbols and you know, and imagery and iconography and tribalism and so forth. And so I get all that. So that would be the first thing. Also, I mean, I don't mean to be like Johnny Pedantic or anything here, but it does seem like, by definition, if you're saying that having that cross there then indicates that at least in that space the state is endorsing a particular religion, and over there is a Star of David, and over there is a whatever, and so then by definition, the mathematical corollary to that must be that then everywhere else in the building is an endorsement of atheism.
Yes.
Everywhere there isn't a cross, therefore, is endorsing atheism, or at least a strident brand of agnosticism. So they, you know, so everybody's happy. Yeah. And in fact, they should be more happy because 98% of the building will be cross-free.
In fact, if you were religious, you could probably get yourself all upset because so
equal
much
time.
Of this thing is secular.
That's right, because there's
How dare you have 99.9% of this thing be secular?
But the cross almost feels like a token. It feels like a smack in the face at this point, frankly, to Christians that they only have the one cross when the rest of the building is crossless. I mean, they got nothing in the way of crosses, crucifixes.
They're practically spitting on God by not covering every single inch of it with crosses.
I'm going to be horrified on their behalf for the rest of the day.
All right.
Okay.
A Monroe County, Florida sheriff's deputy dropped his gun on the beach and dived into the ocean late Saturday to help save the life of a Miami man who was hallucinating on mushrooms and apparently intent on drowning himself. The drama played out about 11:30 p.m. after Deputy Nicholas Whiteman responded to a call. He found paramedics already on the scene with two men and two women in Long Key State Park. One of the men, later identified as Daniel Yepes, 21, of Miami, began running. His friend Jason Mavila ran after him. From the beach, Yepes ran into the water, said he wanted to drown. Mavila went into the water after him. The two men struggled. Yepes went under the water. At that moment, Officer Whiteman dropped his gun belt on the sand and ran in to assist Mavila. In his report, Whiteman, 26, wrote, I gave Yepes loud verbal commands to stop resisting and to let me bring him back to shore. Yepes continued to struggle violently by pushing himself and Mavila away numerous times as we were attempting to hang on to him.
Did he give verbal commands to the other guy going, Jason Mavila? Jason Mavila?
He probably didn't think about that in, you know, the heat of the moment.
But that's because I wasn't there to remind him.
So anyway, the hallucinating mushroom guy was finally pulled from the water in handcuffs.
Awesome.
And taken to a hospital for treatment.
I wonder what he thought was happening then. Like, I wonder what his trip was at that point. Like, wow, it's so wet and I can't move. Oh, man.
Well, after he received his Miranda warning, by the way, and he came down from his suicidal high, he admitted to owning the green leafy substance that was in his pocket and the pack of zigzag rolling papers. Whiteman wrote, he also apologized many times over for striking me and said he remembered very little of the incident. Yepez then thanked me for potentially saving his life.
I'm sorry, did you call it a green leafy substance?
Yes, he had marijuana on him,
okay.
But he did, I don't know if he, they said, hey, this green leafy substance, is that yours?
Was it all mushed up and so they couldn't quite tell what it was?
It was in some kind of a can, so it might have still been dry.
Maybe he's taking it like a pinch between his cheek and gum style. Or not. Is that accurate over
that
there?
That is indeed
all
accurate.
Right. So coming up next hour on the Rick Emerson radio program, we'll have a penis watch, also Nazi watch. That is coming up at rickemersonshow.com, plus a recap of Sunday's episode of True Blood. That is season 4, episode 4, I believe. Recap of True Blood from Sunday. That'll be coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where you can listen for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. Here is Don Taylor.
Washington State Wildlife... Let's try that again. Washington State wildlife officers have tranquilized and removed a young cougar spotted lounging and snoozing 12 feet up a fir tree just south of the Veterans Medical Center in Vancouver, Washington. A Veterans Center doctor spotted the cougar on Monday, and the wildlife crew was notified. The tree was about 60 yards from Interstate 5. Once drugged, the 2-year-old cougar was taken to an undisclosed location in the Gifford Pinchot National Forest and was released. Captain Murray Schlenker told the Columbia newspaper,
an honorary member of the Scorpions,
that cougar sightings are rare in urban Vancouver, with the most recent being in 2003. So getting back to that debt ceiling stuff.
What about it?
President Obama calls it an important first step in ensuring that the U.S. does not live beyond those means we were talking about. He also says Americans played a critical role in the deal.
It was a long and contentious debate, and I want to thank the American people for keeping up the pressure on their elected officials to put politics aside and work together for the good of the country.
Thank you for your constant bitching and pissing and moaning, kvetching. I couldn't have done it without you. No, really, you're a peach, all of you.
Obama says politics were finally put aside for the good of the country.
This compromise guarantees more than $2 trillion in deficit reduction. It's an important first step to ensuring that, as a nation, we live within our means.
Uh-huh. I don't think any of that means exactly what he thinks it means. So when they say a compromise... I'm not too bright. I'm unclear about whether the debt ceiling got raised or, despite my chicanery of a few minutes ago when I was pretending not to know, it wasn't lowered, but was it raised or did they just go, let's leave it there for now? I'm so unclear about whether the debt ceiling actually got lifted, or in other words, are we going to be spending even more money that we don't have or just the same amount of money that we don't have? That's what I'm trying to... That's the thing I'm trying to figure out. I can't quite wrap my brain around that part of it.
Let's see, shall we? The compromise allows the debt ceiling increase by as much as $2.4 trillion in total. So it is going to increase a bit. Included is an immediate increase of $400 billion. Obama would be permitted to request another $500 billion in coming months, which Congress could vote to disallow by veto if they get a two-thirds veto majority. A further increase of between $1.2 trillion and $1.5 trillion would be available after a special committee identifies matching levels of additional spending cuts. So
apparently the initial request was to raise the debt ceiling by $10 trillion, and now they'll be able to raise it by no more than a total of $7 trillion.
Yeah, there you go.
So we're saving $3 trillion.
Money.
So this is akin to saying that I'm saving money by not buying a sofa and setting fire to it.
They're also calling for cuts of more than $900 billion over 10 years in spending from programs, agencies, and day-to-day spending. That's going to include security-related and non-security-related cuts. It also creates a 12-person House and Senate special committee to identify further spending cuts, and they have to complete their work by Thanksgiving. So they're supposed to, work between now and November to figure out where to slice all the money off.
I totally want that gig. They don't have to do anything. They don't have to, really, I mean, you talk about a place where nobody is going to expect any results. It must be so great to have a government job, where no one expects you to actually produce anything except just memoranda and minutia.
Well, the other thing is that the people who are on this special committee, this is going to be it's going to be a horrible job, really, because if they actually do their job, because the things that they're taxed with doing, really, are overhauling the tax code and finding ways to cut money from Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security.
Yeah, but I mean...
So anything they do people are going to just hate them.
Yeah, but here's why that doesn't matter. Here's why it's still a great job to get. Overhauling the tax code is fine because, I mean, let's be honest. If I just brought in the annotated tax code this year and then I brought it back next year and I said, tell me what we've changed, no one would know. Also, no one really cares about Medicare, you know, and Medicaid except for people who really need those services, and you can outrun them any day of the week. I mean, honestly. I mean, seriously, what are they, you know?
And also, there's going to be this, one of the things that a lot of people haven't really talked about in this, too, is there's going to be a shakeup in student loans. They're actually going to be eliminating subsidized student loans for graduate students. So if you are a graduate student and you have a subsidized student loan, you're going to be screwed. And they're going to take the money they're saving from that, and they're actually going to increase Pell Grants for low-income students by $17 billion. So I think we talk about them not like, you know, them dinging the rich and not giving anything to the poor people. In the case of actual student loans, it's going to actually sort of be the opposite. Low-income students are going to benefit, and graduate students, however, are going to be kind of screwed.
Is it student loans that were only going to graduate students, or is it student loans in general that
they're
going to be?
They're going to eliminate a certain kind of subsidized loan for graduate students entirely,
okay.
And then they're going to take money they're saving from that and pump $17 billion into Pell Grants for low-income college students.
Well, it seems like if you're working in a graduate degree, you're probably not going to end up like wearing a paper hat and serving fries, so, you know,
yeah.
I'm okay with that, I guess. Say, based solely on this two-sentence description, which could be incredibly flawed and biased for all I know, my mind has been changed. Hello, I am Rick Emerson, the average American. I have no actual understanding of this issue whatsoever, but I'm going to stridently stick to this position that I just recently formed.
That's what we're here for.
Really, it's what we do. We're here to make the populace, we should just offer ourselves up as ministers of disinformation to any vested interest or company. We should just, like, right now, we should rent ourselves out to, like, anybody that has dirt they want to get. Nike.
We could be a think tank.
David Wu.
Max Brum.
Sam Adams. Any politician or corporation that wants the news slanted and biased in their favor, we should totally be news for hire, like the paladin of the news world.
I think as long as we acknowledge at the top of the story.
Why do you always do that? Why do you always have to muck things up? This is why no one hires us.
Because I have integrity.
I want nice things. God. People are never going to hire you to be a mouthpiece if you have to keep admitting that it's made up.
God damn it.
You're not in a newspaper. Quit that.
Okay, sorry. An Ohio jury on Monday began the sentencing phase for convicted serial killer Anthony Sowell, ultimately deciding whether he should receive life in prison or the death penalty for killing 11 Cleveland-area women between 2007 and 2009. Jurors on July 22nd convicted Sowell of 11 counts of aggravated murder and more than 70 other charges, including abusing corpses and kidnapping.
Abusing corpses is the worst charge ever.
Yeah. The sole not guilty verdict came on an aggravated robbery charge. On Monday, they heard from prosecutors asking for the death penalty and from defense attorneys trying to save his life. John Parker, who's representing Sowell, said, "We believe that at the end of the day, at the end of all the evidence, that you will decide that death is not an appropriate penalty in this particular case." During the sentencing phase, the defense can call up to 28 witnesses, among them family members, acquaintances, and 5 experts. They are expected to wrap up their case in 4 or 5 days. The prosecution expects to call 2 or 3 witnesses of its own during the rebuttal phase, and Sowell himself will be able to make a statement on his own behalf without being under oath or facing cross-examination. Sowell has been classified as a sexually violent predator, meaning that parole is not an option. If jurors decide to recommend that he die for his crimes, the judge can overrule that recommendation and impose a life sentence. But if jurors decide to spare his life, the judge cannot impose a death sentence.
See, then some horrible person is typing, "Where is the slut walk for corpses?" And then corrected himself by saying, "That's the zombie walk."
Right.
Yes.
I was about to say that, so he figured that out.
There we go. We're all on the same page. Here's the thing about the death penalty is that, the death penalty really is a suitable punishment for all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't mean we ought to do it. There's any number of people that, I mean, if I were to find out, like, today that they were going to be smited, you know, just something horrible was going to befall, that wouldn't care at all. Don't care. Not even the tiniest little bit. There's all kinds of people that just, they have it coming. But it's just, you know, it just becomes messy and complicated if you start going around giving every bastard what he deserves.
That's true.
I mean, you know, the world's filled with bastards, but it becomes a full-time job if you're just giving every guy what he really ought to get.
Yeah. Although someone should do that.
Yeah.
That's why we need superheroes.
Fair enough, Don Taylor. Fair enough. Hey, it's 12:24. It's Legion of News. It's Cascadia.fm. Thank you for listening. Coming up later on this hour, entertainment news, science on the march to discredit all that you believed about humanity. We'll be on the way in just here in just a moment. Let's see. And next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at RickEmersonShow.com. That is RickEmersonShow.com. Here is John Taylor.
It is indeed time for science.
Is it now?
Right this second.
This second.
Right now.
Not later.
No, science, science, science.
You know, here's why it shouldn't be, because just to everybody's horror slash pleasure, I've got a NASA story that I actually just came across that I'm going to print out in just a moment.
Okay.
So we should delay that by just one story here, and then we'll have even more science on which to trod.
Well, then I will tell you this story instead. Officials are trying to determine why a New Jersey Transit bus with a dead driver inside idled for nearly 5 hours at the Port Authority terminal in New York.
Well, because it's got an effective engine.
Thomas Truex was found slumped in a passenger seat around 3 p.m., hours after he dropped off his last commuters on Thursday morning. When Truex didn't return the bus to the Meadowlands garage as planned, New Jersey Transit officials called his wife, but she hadn't seen him. At about the same time, the bus was spotted at the Port Authority, parked near a curb where drivers routinely stop for a bathroom or coffee break. The fact that he was in a passenger seat made it less likely that security would have noticed him, officials said. It would not have looked out of the ordinary, said Port Authority spokesman Steve Coleman. Coleman said officials probably needed to take a look at coordination to make sure anything out of the ordinary is kept checked out. Truex has been a driver 26 years. His death is not considered suspicious.
So but why didn't they notice that he was just, was he parked where no one could see him?
I think the thing is, he was parked at a place where the bus drivers often park to take a break. But he wasn't behind the wheel.
He was
sitting in one of the passenger seats. So anybody who just passed by quickly would think that the driver had stopped there and had jumped out to get coffee, and that was just a passenger who was waiting. And the thing is, I guess nobody was around long enough to realize it had been there for 5 hours.
Meanwhile, he's just sort of moldering away,
yes,
like in the back somewhere.
And but on the other hand, though, the engine was running, so that means the air conditioning might have been on. Considering how hot it is on the East Coast right now, that's probably a good thing. A dead body for five
hours.
Oh,
I see.
In a hot bus.
Not for him.
No, not for him, but for anybody who might have to go pull him out later.
No, you don't want to do that. All right, are we ready? Okay, we're ready for science now, ladies and gentlemen. Here is your Science on the March for Tuesday, August 2nd, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them online at squireselectric.com if you have issues with your wiring, with your wires in your home or your business, whether it's installing, upgrading, repairing, whether you've got an inspection coming up, or whether you're just all thumbs, or whether you're not all thumbs. Maybe you're 10 fingers and 10 toes, but you realize if you try to do this yourself, you're still going to be 10 fingers, but maybe you won't have toes. Maybe your feet will just end in balls of fire.
Or maybe you're all pinkies, which would be even worse than being all thumbs, because thumbs can actually do things.
Maybe you are 8 pinkies, a snout, and an ear,
yeah,
through some sort of genetic mishap.
Or you're nothing normal at all, and you just have flaps.
If you, with that, you probably can't even dial. So get yourself a service dog, and then have them contact Squires Electric. If you've got a mouth, I think, to call the dog, if you're not just having to contact him through telepathy or just through some sort of a...
Or just slapping your flippers on the tabletop.
Morse code. If your dog can work your interocitor, please have them contact Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. You can also find them at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March.
Your belly button is home to at least 60 to 100 or more species of bacteria, fungi, and yeast.
Shut up about my belly button.
The findings, to be presented on August 12th at the Ecological Society of America's 96th annual meeting in Austin, Texas,
are disgusting.
Demonstrate how a belly button can become a haven for complex biodiversity.
Uh-huh.
Rob Dunn, assistant professor in the Department of Biology at North Carolina State University, said, although we find about 60 or 70 species on the average person, we have found more than 1,400 species overall, such that differences among individuals are great. Dunn and his colleagues so far collected skin bacteria from the belly buttons of 391 test subjects from across the nation. Men and women of different ages and ethnic backgrounds, and even differing hygienic habits, were included in the study. The researchers have been focusing on bacterial content within the samples, but, he said, there are also fungi and some interesting yeasts.
Somebody notes, this is the worst job ever. This really is one of the worst jobs ever. And also, well, there's two things. I have an observation, then I have a question. The observation would be, so is that So is that why just your belly button just is, I mean, not yours, of course, but belly buttons are just stink to high heaven. They just reek.
Oh, yeah.
Belly buttons are just vile.
Yeah, I mean, that is the bacteria and the yeasts and stuff that do that.
So it's like an MTV Real World cast, but of bacteria, and it's in your navel.
Yeah, they harbor a lot of organisms, and they are often undisturbed by cleansers, lotions, ultraviolet light, and other things that would otherwise kill the bacteria. While many people might now be more mindful of belly button washing, Dunn said, such organisms are also found on our forearms, hands, and really the entire surface of the body, and they form an important function. He said they are a kind of first-line defense against pathogens that land on us, a kind of living army on our skin that, when it meets a newly arriving pathogen, has as a first response to try and compete. A person who successfully scrubbed all of the microbes off his or her body would be at incredibly high risk of deadly skin infection.
So it's like it's like the Sparta of your abdomen.
Yes, they are. So today we dine on yeast.
Now, see, there's nothing that rhymes with, this is, and I was trying to come up with a.
Yeah, no,
nothing rhymes with Sparta. That's like your navel. But my other question though is, and I've asked this for years. No one could ever really tell me why this is the case. So then, I say as though the two things are related somehow. Why is your navel lint always a dark blue color, no matter what color clothing you wear?
That I couldn't answer.
But
you.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's always your navel lint, always dark blue. No matter what it is, no matter what kind of clothing you're wearing.
Are you sure that's true for everyone or just you?
I am almost certain. I mean, this is just based on, it's not like I've done like a lot of field work or something about it, but I mean, based on just the random sampling of people I have asked, it doesn't matter what you're wearing. I mean, it could just be nothing but gabardine. I mean, you could be wearing nothing but the finest silk linens and ecru colored, pajamas. Your navel lint is going to be like a dark blue color.
Hmm.
Doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, there is a paper that was published in the journal Animal Behavior in which a woman and her colleague analyzed microbial communities on humans and other animals and pointed out that bacteria even changes the behavior of its hosts. For example, steroids and other natural chemicals found under human armpits are one example. They are primarily products of bacterial metabolism and can result in all sorts of strange odors that affect how we interact with each other. For instance, they said some Corynebacterium metabolize testosterone to produce a musky, urine-like scent,
ugh,
while others metabolize sebum and sweat to produce an onion-like odor. There's ample evidence that bacteria produce small axillary odor and that armpit odors serve as recognition cues among humans. And, for example, they have done studies which have shown that mothers can recognize their children from their armpit smells alone.
Okay, this is the worst story we've ever read, and it is, and we are literally halfway through the lunch hour right now.
Yeah.
Dead set in the middle of lunch hour. Hey, now look at this. Somebody
science isn't always tasty.
No, your body is revolting. Your body isn't a wonderland so much as your body is a sewer. Just one big big rendering plant. Okay, somebody says, I wear a lot of red t-shirts and my navel lint is blue every time. What the hell? That's what I'm saying. See, there's something afoot with navel lint and its coloration. It makes no sense at all. I'm onto something
there. You are onto something.
All right.
I'll bet you could get a grant.
I totally should. Okay, nobody else go apply for that one. I'm calling dibs on navel lint and its blueness.
Scientists have pinpointed nerve cells that keep breathing regular and body temperature. What?
What?
Scientists have pinpointed nerve cells that keep breathing regular and body temperature stable in mice. These life-sustaining cells also produce the chemical messenger serotonin. A guy from Harvard Medical School and his colleagues reported this in the July 29th issue of Science. The researchers used a genetic trick to shut down the neurons' activities in the brains of mice. Just minutes later, the mice began to have breathing problems and their body temperatures plummeted. Knowing more about how these nerve cells operate may help scientists better understand sudden infant death syndrome, which has been linked to serotonin deficiency.
Okay, can I just tell you? Next email I got, somebody... White shirts, blue lint. Even more, what the hell is up with that? This is a thing that everybody has probably wondered about. I am the first to ask it aloud, publicly.
Are you sure it's not like denim lint migrating upwards from your pants?
I don't know how your pants work. My pants don't migrate anywhere,
no,
except occasionally to the floor. How would that... How?
I don't know. You don't know why the lint is blue when you wear a white shirt. It's all a mystery.
Lint doesn't migrate.
Oh.
It's not. They're not buffalo. It's not. They're not. They're not going north for the spring harvest.
Have you ever had flannel sheets, and then found tumbleweeds of colored flannel lint elsewhere in your home.
But that's because the it balls up and it comes off and it sticks to your clothing. That's all over you because the sheets are in swaddling you. They're you're enrobed in them.
Or perhaps it migrates.
It doesn't. Okay.
A NASA spacecraft released photos Monday of an asteroid twice the size of the state of California. The asteroid Vesta, between Mars and Jupiter, is being probed by a spacecraft called Dawn.
Really?
Yes. I'm probing an asteroid right now.
Okay.
Chris Russell of the mission is the mission's lead investigator. He says the photos are stunning.
Really gross. What?
The mission's lead investigator says the photos are stunning.
Okay, these are the pictures of you probing an asteroid.
This is me probing Vesta.
We see dark material we never expected on there. You know, what is causing those craters with the, you know, the black streaks going down them? I hadn't seen anything like that before. When we first saw those pictures, we really did gasp and smile a lot.
See, aren't you glad I waited for science to have this story?
Oh, indeed.
About you probing and there being black streaks and everybody smiling a lot and gasping.
Russell is the mission's lead investigator. He says he now believes Vesta is one of the oldest objects in our solar system.
We believe this goes to the back to the first 5 million years of the solar system. So that's the geochemists tell us that is 4.65 billion years ago.
No one cares. Let's hear about streaks again.
You see dark material we never expected on there. What is causing those craters with the
Mexican
food? The black streaks going down them. I haven't seen anything like that before. When we first saw those pictures, we really did gasp and smile a lot.
He said, "We'll win Larry Flynt's monthly contest for sure."
Some birds massage each other, according to a new study that found the stress levels of both masseuses and their subjects are lowered after their time together. The study, published in the latest issue of Royal Society Biology Letters, further determined that subordinates seemed to enjoy massages the most when they are given by their superiors. Andy Radford, author of the study, said, "It may be that subordinates are more likely to be the stressed ones in a group. So if they get a massage from a usually threatening dominant individual, it's particularly relaxing because it means they're accepted and they feel secure." Radford is a researcher at the School of Biological Sciences at the University of Bristol, and he focuses attention on greed wood hoopoes, large tropical birds native to Africa. After receiving massage like grooming by another bird, they reduce their anxiety levels and relax in a sort of happy stupor for a noticeable period. Other birds engage in such behavior too, apparently even with other species. Scientists are interested in this kind of behavior for a number of reasons. One is because they wonder why individuals spend time and energy on others when the rewards aren't apparent and immediate. In this case, the individuals being groomed and massaged receive a clear benefit, but what about the birds that are doing the massaging?
Well, I think we all know the answer to that.
I don't.
Me either. I was bluffing. I was hoping you would.
Radford said that they may be trading grooming for food tolerance or participation in later intragroup and intergroup conflicts.
Oh, is this like those chicks on Craigslist that always just need a little bit to help pay their cell bill for this month?
This is like when you go to a party and a guy offers you some Coke. You know, no strings attached, mind you, but, the implications.
I think it's more like the girl offering a massage on Craigslist who needs a little bit of money to pay her cell bill this month. So it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a one-time thing.
Only with birds.
Not professionally, you understand. It's not like she does that all the time.
No.
It's just, times are difficult.
Organizers want to go beyond Earth to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Seattle's Space Needle. Yesterday, they announced a multi-tiered contest to send a member of the public on a short ride into space using a company from the burgeoning space travel industry.
He should totally be shot from the top of the Space Needle with a huge rubber band.
Yes.
That's how we should do it. Or just, strap a rocket to him and just wire him to the top of the Space Needle and blast him straight up.
On a completely unrelated note, I saw this thing yesterday. I think it's the CNN Tower? It's like the largest... building in North America, the tallest building in North America.
Sears Tower.
No, it's CNN Tower. It's in Toronto. It's really,
sure.
It's CNN Tower. But anyway, it's hugely high. It's like miles and miles up in the sky. And they have this thing now where it's you can pay them. Why you would do this, I don't know. But they take groups of five or six people tethered to something, and you can walk around the like foot and a half wide thing at the very top of it.
Why in the name of God?
I don't know. That's just crazy.
Unless you made a bet with Robert Loggia over the head of your wife, I can't understand why it is that you would agree to participate in that activity.
And people pay them. People pay to do it.
No, do not. No.
No.
No, no. I don't want that for anybody else. Not only do I not want that for myself, I do not want for other people. They must strap you in. Well, because that's the thing where, like, there has to be a guy who goes up there to change the light bulb or something occasionally, right?
And that's basically it. So they have this series of pipes and things, and then they harness you in, and then you have a thing with a clip, and you're attached to the thing, but they take five or six people at a time, and you walk around the thing. But, like, honestly, the walkway's only like 2 feet wide, and you're like 5 miles up in the air.
Seriously,
or something.
And I gotta tell you, just standing on top of the Empire State Building, which isn't, I mean, it's tall, but it's not even the tallest building
building is taller than the Empire State Building.
And that's not even the tallest, that's not even the tallest building in North America at this point. And it's like, and by the way, in the Empire State Building, it's like there's not just like a huge cement wall and a railing. They're big, thick, curved bars that bend inward at the top so that you could not possibly climb over them. I mean, there's no way, short of like having a jetpack, that you could get over them. And yet still you stand and you go like, and you are overcome by that sensation that you're going to fall. And here you're actually just out with just some sort of a cabling or some sort of safety apparatus.
It's like the idiots that bungee jump off the top of that building in Las Vegas for fun.
No.
It's like, no, it's
no,
just
I thank
wrong.
You, no.
Anyway, so in this case, it's people being shot up into space. Robert Sevart, CEO of Pacific of the Space Needle, said, "The private business of taking people to space is right in front of us. It felt so natural for us to build a contest around that." So, to mark the occasion, Buzz Aldrin spoke at the announcement.
Really? Did he punch a guy in the face?
I wish he would have, but Buzz Aldrin came and he said that private industry is going to gradually assume some of the things that government has been able to do only previously. The ability to continue exploring space is going to be dependent on private citizens engaging in the business of taking people into space.
Don't talk to me about aliens, please. Space Needle, here's the thing. Maybe to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Space Needle, Rick Emerson should go to Seattle and finally eat at that goddamn restaurant at the top, which everybody always tells you about, and then, like, everybody knows a guy who went there for, like, his, you know, bar mitzvah or something, but nobody ever really goes there. You yourself, anybody listen to me, you yourself have never been there. You've always heard of a guy who went to the top of the Space Needle and ate dinner there.
Is it like the Eiffel Tower, that you go there to eat there just so that you eat there, but the food isn't really that good?
Well, it's also expensive. The only thing about the top of the Space Needle as opposed to the Eiffel Tower is that, A, you don't have to go to goddamn France and speak to Parisians, presumably. And also, it rotates. So the top of the Space Needle, at least it used to, rotates a full circumference in 1 hour. So the deal is that if you eat there, if your meal takes an hour, you can see 360 degrees around you and get the panoramic view of Seattle and whatever. And plus, it's a thing. And the only reason I would want to do it is because the Space Needle, I mean, A, the Space Needle is just kind of awesome, but also the Space Needle is from the World's Fair. And I sort of have I like the idea of World's Fairs more than I would ever like, I think, going to one. Like, I never really want to go to a World's Fair. But you know what I like? I like World's Fairs that happened in the past, so I don't have to go.
I was about to say that. I would like to go to a World's Fair in the past.
That's my thing.
That's when I want to. Those are the ones I want to go to.
And so,
I want to go see Tesla.
That's the deal. And so the Space Needle was for the World's Fair from 1964, I believe. Say what year it was? When the 50th anniversary is going to be?
It does, but I put it aside.
It might be this year, but I don't think so. I think it's like
1962 World's Fair.
Because I had a vintage pennant on my wall growing up that my dad got when he went to the World's Fair in 62. And it's cool. Even in, like, in the 70s, it already looked like weird and retro. Like a sort of, you know, World of Tomorrow. And they have those weird tall white structures that do something or other that just sort of stand there. So that's the only reason I would ever want to do this, because I think plus if you go to the top of the Space Needle and eat dinner there, apparently they have, or had at one point, a lot of memorabilia from the World's Fair still up there, the way it was. So I would do that. Other than that, no, it's bupkis.
That's all the science.
There's your science on the march for Tuesday, August 2nd, 2011. Thank you for joining us for this Science on the March segment brought to you by Squires Electric. Coming up later on this hour, you have your entertainment news in the next hour of the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. Here's Don Taylor.
22 protesters were arrested yesterday and charged with disruption of Congress after shouting chants against Speaker John Boehner from the House of Representatives gallery. The protesters, including members of the National People's Action, Vocal New York, and Community Voices Heard, unveiled... whenever I hear a list of these kinds of things, I just go to Life of Brian, like, immediately.
Oh, the People's Front of Judea.
Yeah, no, we're the Judean People's Front.
Splinter!
They unveiled a large black banner and chanted, "Hey, Boehner, get a clue. It's about revenue." And, "Boehner, get off it. It's time to tax corporate profits." They need some work with their
chants.
That's
just dumb.
Then Capitol Police removed them from one of the galleries overlooking the chamber. Amanda DeVecca-Rinier, campaign director for National People's Action, said, "What they were protesting is this, what we're calling a raw deal here, the debt ceiling deal that does absolutely nothing to raise revenue and really asks elderly people, working families, people who have health care needs to make all these sacrifices, whereas letting Wall Street and the super rich off the hook." Capitol Police closed down part of the gallery, the hallway, because the protesters continued to chant after being moved outside of the gallery.
I love the idea somehow that and I'm no one to dispute the fact that the super rich play by a different set of rules, but I love the notion that the super rich are omnipotent and all-powerful, and they're able to influence everything everywhere, and they have complete control of the economy and the stock market, and yet, like, John Boehner's going to be able to change that. Right. He's going to be the one to stop it. That somehow, you know, that it's all going to be different after this, because they will then have to color inside the same lines as everybody else.
Boehner will look up and realize, oh, they're chanting. We must be upsetting people. I am reconsidering my position on everything. And now I am going to use my powers for good instead of evil.
And just also that, like, the super rich wouldn't just go, well, whatever, and then just get in their heliocraft and fly off to, like, whatever secluded island they live on where they pay no taxes at all.
Or just have him killed and get a new guy.
Or that too. Not that we're advocating that.
Speaking of submarines.
Are we, Don?
No.
We wish a long life and the best of health to all elected officials everywhere.
No, yeah.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
Speaking of submarines, the U.S. Coast Guard announced Monday it had recovered $180 million worth of cocaine from a sunken submarine off the coast of Honduras.
It's the white lady down.
The news comes nearly 2 weeks after the pilot of a Border Patrol aircraft spotted the sub in Caribbean waters and alerted the Coast Guard, which then tracked down the vessel. Video taken from a helicopter that same day shows a Coast Guard boat approaching the smugglers as they attempted to escape in a life raft and then scuttled the sub. Law enforcement officials took the crew into custody before embarking on an extensive search for the sunken vessel. The Coast Guard located the sub on July 26th, and a dive team eventually recovered about 7.5 tons of cocaine.
Jesus. Are you sure you're not just reading me Peter Benchley novel over there?
No. Well, not yet.
It sounds very much like that.
He has taken extensive notes on this, I'm sure, and is sending it to one of his minions to write the book for
because,
him.
Well, A, he's not really taking notes on anything but worms at the moment. B,
is he dead?
Yes, he's dead long time. Also, this was the plot of The Deep. This was the plot of a Benchley novel.
No.
Except it wasn't cocaine, it was heroin. And it was the thing of a boat or submarine sank and it had like $50 billion of heroin inside of it.
Commander Charles Fossey, commander of the Coast Guard vessel that detained the smugglers, told ABC News, "It was immediately obvious to our boarding crew that the self-propelled semi-submersible vessel was taking on water and was being scuttled by its crew. We recovered two packages, and the SPSS sank seconds after that." According to the Coast Guard, narco submarines are a rare find in the Caribbean and instead usually turn up in the Eastern Pacific. They're usually around 100 feet long and are often built for traffickers by FARC, a Colombian guerrilla group.
Drew Curtis could not be reached for comment.
The vessels are also commonly designed to allow for quick scuttling in the event of capture. Lieutenant Commander Peter Niles, whose Coast Guard crew located the sub, didn't hold back his amazement over the dramatic series of events. He told ABC News, "This is a once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-career thing that happens.
I am so high right now.
I have been here for 27 years, and I have never been involved in a drug case like this."
Does anybody have any Floyd or anything, or just Steely Dan or Bachman-Turner Overdrive? Anything at all?
Wow, that was loud suddenly. There we go.
I was covering the guffaws of the audience at my humorous reference of Bachman-Turner Overdrive.
Yes.
Because no one does that.
No.
No one references Bachman-Turner Overdrive.
You're timely.
That's right.
You know what the kids like. Your finger is on the pulse.
Well, I could do this again. Hold on. How about, oh, you know, this cocaine would go really great with my Zager and Evans box set. All right.
A woman died Sunday after falling 5 stories in a Washington casino atrium at a high school reunion.
What are the odds? Casino.
A preliminary investigation has ruled out foul play. The woman, who appeared to be in her 20s, was attending Shelton High School's 10-year reunion at Little Creek Casino in Shelton, Washington, when she fell over a fifth-floor railing at 11:14 a.m. Sunday. She was taken to Harborview Medical Center, where she was pronounced dead. The woman had yet to be identified. The main reunion activities were on Saturday, but the woman apparently extended her stay into Sunday.
Or forever.
Forever.
Stay a while. Stay forever!
Let's
from Impossible Mission.
Okay. All right. Let's do entertainment news.
Okay. Here's your, are you implying the news so far has not been entertaining?
Yeah. I got almost no entertainment news today, by the way. It is a sad day for entertainment news, so.
All right. Well, that means it's a step forward for humanity, I suppose. Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday.
When Ashley Hebert set out to be the Bachelorette this season, she hoped to find the man of her dreams among a field of 25 potential suitors. The Madawaska, Maine native, who is 26, will soon finish dental school at the University of Pennsylvania, and she promised herself she'd follow her heart to true love, and now she says she found it. Two men asked for her hand in marriage on Monday's finale, Sonoma, California winemaker Ben Flajdick, 28, and New York construction manager J.P. Rosenbaum, 35. Viewers saw that Hebert had an incredible connection to Flajdick, but it was the...
No one has a connection to Flajdick.
But it was more the more reserved Rosenbaum who captured her heart. After turning down Flajdick's heartfelt proposal, in which he confessed, "Every second I spend with you makes me fall deeper in love with you. I want to thank you for allowing me to feel completely and utterly vulnerable and open with you." She then waited for the other guy to show up. And married him, said she'd marry him.
This sounds like one of those Woody Allen short stories that used to be in The New Yorker, like The Flajdick Conundrum. A farce in five acts.
She probably just married him because she could not imagine changing her last name to Flajdick.
No one can change their last name to Flajdick. It violates every known law of humankind.
We have multiple Charlie Sheen news today.
Excellent, fantastic.
First of all, Charlie Sheen has dropped his extortion lawsuit against the porn star who locked herself in the bathroom during his hotel meltdown last year. Only because, however, they can't find her. Sources on Charlie's legal team told TMZ that they've pulled the plug on the lawsuit against Capri Anderson, in which Charlie accused her of trying to extort him for $1 million, but they did it without prejudice, which means they can refile the same suit later. Charlie hasn't given up the fight. According to sources, the only reason he dropped the suit was because they couldn't track her down to serve her with papers. On the other hand, TMZ spoke to her.
So TMZ, so Harvey Levin can find her, and Charlie Sheen,
Charlie Sheen's lawyers and such.
With his massive extraterrestrial-like powers, is not able to deduce her location.
Right. Okay. But they spoke to her, to Capri Anderson, whose real name is Christina Walsh.
Mm-hmm.
And she changed her name from Walsh to Anderson, because I guess that's sexier.
Yeah.
She said, "The plaintiff was unable to serve me with a lawsuit. I have nothing more to say. I've moved on." In other Charlie Sheen news, it's been announced that the ninth season premiere of Two and a Half Men, which will feature the debut of new star Ashton Kutcher, Charlie Sheen's character is indeed dead, and the season premiere will feature his funeral.
That's fantastic. Well done. That's great.
Charlie's girlfriends will come back for the occasion, and his house indeed will be put on the market. The episode will feature potential buyers coming to look at the house, with Ashton Kutcher among them. However, he will not be the rightful owner of Charlie Harper's house until the end of the premiere episode, and the storyline is expected to continue into episode
two. You can always tell on a TV show when their contract demands have been a little too aggressive and strident, because then they kill the character off so there's no coming back. I mean, unless it's a soap opera.
Let's start the season with his funeral.
You just never. Well, that's a trick that Coppola tried to use on Al Pacino, because Pacino, his demands for Godfather 3 were actually so outrageous. He wanted so much money for Godfather, and he wanted like script approval and dialogue approval. And Coppola said, "Well, no, get bent." And Pacino's like, And Coppola actually said, I think it was probably a bluff, but Coppola said, "I've got a draft at home where the first scene is your funeral. So, I mean, it's up to you. Michael can just die in the opening sequence of the film, or you can just quit being such a bastard and, you know, and come do the shoot." So, the thing is, there's no coming back from that either.
No.
I mean, that's like when they killed off Valerie Harper's character, you know? You want more money? How about this? Car crash! And that's it. Done.
Actor Matt Damon rallied teachers Saturday at a march in Washington, decrying the widespread use of standardized testing to judge how well teachers, students, and schools are performing. A group of teachers and education advocates organized the Save Our Schools March in an effort to inspire change in standardized testing policies. Critics say standardized testing takes teachers' focus of their core mission off of their core mission of educating students. Teachers marched to the White House chanting "Save Our Schools" and other slogans and carrying signs. One sign read, "Children are more important than test scores," and another read, "I am not the problem." Damon, whose mother is an educator, said he achieved his successes in large part because teachers in the public schools he attended were not forced to focus on silly test prep and instead could work to educate. He said, "As I look at today, the things that I value about myself, my imagination, my love of acting, my passion for writing, my love of learning, my curiosity, came from the way I was parented and taught. And none of these qualities that I just mentioned, none of these qualities that I prize so deeply, none of these qualities that have brought me such joy, that have made me so successful professionally, none of these qualities that make me who I am can be tested."
So why is it that we don't dislike Matt Damon when he goes and runs his mouth about stuff like this? But if it were, you know, but if it were like John Travolta or somebody, or, you know,
if it was Affleck.
Or, if it was Affleck, I'd be. I've been behind Affleck since day one, and I'm not just saying that because I think he's a comer. I'm saying I've always been solidly pro Affleck. But you know what I mean? If it was just some other guy, if it was John Stamos, you'd be like, "Shut up, John Stamos."
Matt Damon is just damn likable. He just is.
He seems like a good lad.
He does.
He seems like a good guy.
He seems like just a lovely fellow.
I have to say this, that I mean, knowing almost nothing about Matt Damon, and by the way, I have to say that it's a point of pride with me that we don't ever do the Team America thing. We do it like once a year.
Yeah.
Because it's like you just can't do it more often than that. But knowing almost nothing about him, if I had, and I don't, but if I had a baby of some kind, or perhaps one of my many creatures that live in my home,
Matt Damon Emerson.
No, I was just saying if you had to leave your baby, you know, with a Hollywood celebrity, like if you had to, you know, if I said, "Look, there's no choice, you have to leave your baby with a Hollywood celebrity tonight," and I said, "And that celebrity is Matt Damon," I think people would be okay with that.
Yeah, if Tom Bosley wasn't available, then Matt Damon would be my next choice.
Yeah, I mean, if he was slightly younger, Dick Van Patten, maybe. I would leave a prized possession of mine with Matt Damon because he seems like an upright and honorable guy.
Also, Justin Timberlake. I just read, there's this great interview with him in Vanity Fair that I just read last night, and everything I read about Justin Timberlake, I just go, you know, He just seems like a delightful human being.
Right. No, and here's the other thing, and you know, and I would also trust one of my worldly possessions, or perhaps a valued loved one, with George Clooney.
Yes. Yes.
Although, not for a long period of time, because he'd have to leave the country at some point to go jet setting.
Yeah, Clooney's a little busy. I wouldn't leave a baby or a pet, something that needs like care. Although I'm sure the people that work for him would also do a fine job.
Well, you get the feeling he'd probably let you know, like, "I can watch this baby until 8 p.m., but it's like then I got to take off.
Yeah.
Because that game is starting. So if you want to, you know, if you can be back here by then, you know, if not. But all right, we got 1 minute here.
I got nothing for a minute. I just. Okay, I was confused. I'm always confused. I don't know what I'm doing all of a sudden. Look at me.
Okay. It's going out strong.
A man named Tihal Dosanjh in Turlock, California, found a stack of money in a Dropbox at a bank, and he said he was shocked. "I looked at the deposit tag," he said. "It came out to over $16,000. I was shocked. I couldn't believe it." He went to make a deposit, and he opened the Dropbox and found the money had not gone all the way in. It was just sitting in the Dropbox. The bank was closed, so he took the money home, put it in a safe place, and then came back the next morning and gave it back.
Aww.
He said that his parents and the Sikh religion taught him honesty and hard work. "I've been blessed with so much, I really wanted to give it back to the person that earned it. I knew I had to do this, that I had to return it to the bank." A spokesperson for the bank said that the customer before Dosanjh never deposited the large sum of money correctly. They were very thankful when he returned the money so that they could get it to the rightful owner.
Well, there needs to be somebody to balance out you and I suppose. All right, and with that, we bring down the curtain on another exciting episode of Legion of News. Here at Cascadia.fm, thank you for joining us. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology magic provided by Mr. Thomas Keel, executive producer Bruce Eichler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today we got your Peanuts Watch, Nazi Watch, and True Blood recap. Recap of True Blood from Sunday. That is coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where you can listen for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. And as always, we thank you for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow. That is Wednesday at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Tuesday, won't you?